Blog Talk Radio.
As the legend goes, an old Cherokee was teaching his grandson about life. He said to the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, guilt, lies, superiority, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, and inside every other person too." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed."
Alrighty, good evening. Hopefully you can hear me. If not, we're in trouble. I need somebody to let me know if I can be heard. I had a little technical difficulty sing out. Alright, and Adam's chat room, he can hear me fine. So, good evening, everyone. My name is Bill Green. I'm the co-host of the Greenhouse Effect, the executive producer, obviously, not here. You can tell by the fact that, you know, I'm 10 minutes late and I'm not sure what I'm doing, is on the road. Will is heading back home, he and his mom, from spending the weekend with his grandson, Jackson, who celebrates today his 16th birthday. So that in itself is well worthy of being out to side tonight's show. Hopefully, will even chime in at some point and just let us know what's up. So again, hoping that I'm being heard out here. Adam's reaffirming that I am. Just carry on. I do not have the smoothness of Will's approach with telling you how to call in. I can only assume that if you've called in, you already know what you did. and if you're not here, well, what the heck? I wouldn't know the difference anyway. So I know there's something you can do about getting in the chat room, which has to do with going right into the Block Radio site, I believe, with the Greenhouse Effect, and you'll see some requests for credit card information. If you charge anything, that will just allow you to come into the Greenhouse Effect, enter into the chat room where you can make all your one comments. Adam, I see, is already in the chat room. Adam, I'm checking with you one more time to be sure I'm being heard. And I'll just keep talking until I see your post. So tonight, it's a full slate. A few things. Actually, it may be one. You know how I tend to do. I had a few things in mind, but it just wind up being one thing we talked about tonight. Mainly, hopefully, the intention is to focus on the theme of mental illness and substance abuse. There's also the ongoing issues of the January 6th hearings and the continuous onslaught on violence throughout this country. With those three things in mind, I would encourage any and all of you listening to feel free to call in. Let your voice be heard. Let us know how you feel about these three topics in particular. Again, mental illness and substance abuse, January 6th hearings that are going on right now, and the continual carnage of unviolence in our country. I mean, just over the last weekend, if I may give me just a second, you know, we had this incredible, is it something about Memorial Day? Is that Juneteenth or the Bud Billiken of gun violence? Is that the idea? Like now that when Memorial Day weekend hits, we just go crazy. Chicago had weekend shootings, leaving 6 dead at 31. This is over the weekend. Indiana, Gary, you know, Gary is, you know, suburb of Chicago. I'm sorry. I hope Gary folks are listening. If so, don't take it personally. Had shooting for the weekend with two dead and four injured in New Orleans in street shooting. Four shot, two fatal in a Tennessee pool party in Antioch, Tennessee. That's a suburb of Nashville. Five teenagers shot near the Louisville Bridge off the Big Four Bridge. I don't know if you ever crossed that bridge going into Kentucky. It's an American structure. Four at a Detroit bachelor party. And if I remember being right, it happened sometime in the afternoon. So I'm assuming that bachelor party must have gone on for a minute. Maybe the groom had second thoughts. One was killed, three in a Georgia arrest shooting in Decatur, Georgia. And I got ready to come on tonight. I saw something flash by my screen that he's fatally shot an armed person at a summer sports camp just outside of Dallas. Hey, I just received a 911 call around 8:43 this morning, and officers are within 2 minutes in the building and engaged a subject armed with a gun, was shot and killed. There were 150 children attending the camp, but none were harmed. And 150 children, individuals showing up with I don't know what type of weapons, it kind of makes me shudder a little bit to think what the plan may have been. Someone posted just a couple of weeks ago on Facebook, a friend of mine, a relative, in fact, you know, and he didn't say it in jest, although people may have thought it was a cruel joke, but no, there was some real intention behind his post, and it said somewhere there's somebody right now, meaning when he saw what happened at the shooting in Uvalde, is that the right name of the city, where just so many children were mowed down right there in the classroom? And the comment he made, you know, I think it was like 19 children and three adults. Yeah, I'm sure y'all will set me straight on the facts. But the point being, the comment was there's somebody right now saying to himself, muttering, that he can top that. And when I read this thing that came across my screen today, it made me just shudder thinking about, you know, the prophetic words that my cousins posted on Facebook. You know, that's some scary business. So according to an ABC News report, 369 people have been killed, 806 wounded just over the past weekend in this country, talking about 6 days from the 3rd of June to the 9th. There's been 19,383 deaths and 37,151 wounded over the last year, over the past year. 95,200 deaths and 186,997 injured over the past 5 years. Question is, why is there so much gun violence in America? You know, America has historically been a violent country toward its own, meaning the inhabitants of the United States, or what we call the United States of America today. It's been celebrated, you know, the violence of this country. It's been fictionalized. It's been minimized, hidden, and denied. But the question just still looms in my head. And maybe somebody, you know, has a comment to make, an opinion about that. Somebody maybe out there right now in the studio who can answer the question, why is there so much gun violence in America? And one other question, how come there's no gun shortage? How come there's no alcohol shortage? You know, all the shortages that we have, you know, create consumer void, people having to do without. How come there's not a situation where we have to do without guns? How come there's not a situation where we have to do without alcohol? You know, I mean, right now the country is teetering on the brink of having a shortage of tampons, just recently baby formula. You know, I remember when COVID hit, there was a rush at the stores for toilet paper. And I got to admit, I was at the head of one of those lines. You know, that's some serious business when you Run out of, there aren't too many alternatives when you run out of toilet paper, y'all. Okay, sorry. Again, in case you're wondering why, you know, you're hearing so much of my bantering, and my EP, you know, the head, the main dude, Will, is it's not a sabbatical. He's just on the road heading home from a weekend trip to Belleville, Illinois, celebrating his son, my grandson's 16th birthday. So he's right now somewhere on the road, and I'm hoping that at some point he'll chime in whenever, you know, he may very well get the chance to. And I have him unmuted so he can just at any given time pop in. Of course, you know, there's road noise and all that, but that's why you haven't heard from Will. That's why I haven't been cut off. That's why you've been hearing 15 minutes of ongoing bantering, which you're going to hear more of before I'm done. So if you have an opinion about why is there so much gun violence in America, even though this is a country that has been founded on violence, why do we have these concerns in regards to the topics being covered tonight? Why are these January 6th hearings, why are we watching it right now? And I am. Is there some magic that's supposed to happen? Is there some new evidence that's going to be presented? Is there some extensive videos that no one has seen that will change the mind of our country? I mean, I get it as far as showing it, but the coverage of it is profound. I'm just wondering what's supposed to come from it. Those that are offended by what transpired on January 6th will continue to be. Those that are relatively indifferent or support the attempted coup will continue to. What is supposed to, is this being treated like, you know, sometimes there's these movies that have a director's cut, you know, and it's like a longer version of the movie you just saw. And people like me like to watch the director's cut so I can get a little extra bang for my buck. You know, I remember watching not too long ago the trilogy of Lord of the Rings, and each one had a director's cut, Fellowship of the Rings, the Two Towers, and The Return of the King. So there's maybe 20 minutes extra video or footage for each one. And that was cool. It filled in some blanks, but it was still the same movie. Still had the same, you know, for me, joy, and had the same outcome. And I'm looking at all of the energy that's going into the review of the hearings, where for the most part, people are being interviewed that are going to be talking about what you've heard other people interviewed about a couple years ago, or last year rather, sorry. There's going to be videos that are going to be different angles and more intense and a lot more cussing and a few more, you know, rocks, bricks thrown and a little bit more anti-bear spray, whatever they call it. But it's still the same Capitol building. It's still the same rush of rioters. It's still the same overwhelming trauma experienced by the police. So the director's cut of this is just adding more of what we already know, but I'm listening to these folks go on and on and on, like they're telling us more of the same thing. The bottom line is, will there be enough people watching whose opinions will be changed in such a way that what? The courts will imprison Trump? I don't see what the hope is. Is this all about just ensuring a victory at the polls in November for the Democrats? Or you know, for the Republicans. I know the ratings are great, have to be, but I'm really wondering what, if anything, you all feel may come from all this. And what is your take on it, if you're even watching it? The other thing, the shootings, there's been a lot of talk back and forth, up and down, about mental illness, as if mental illness is the cause of mass shootings. And, you know, mass shootings are defined as being four or more victims. And you don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be fatal. It could be four people wounded, like the list I just read from. Four shot at the Detroit bachelor party. That's a mass shooting. I don't know who decided four the magic number. I don't see the difference between four or five, three, four or five, you know, or, you know, anyway, somebody came up with that number, and so that's the number we use. So you don't have to die. You don't have to be killed. But as long as there's at least four people injured, then that connotes mass shooting. So mental illness, now there's one congressperson, not going to even get into the name, why even bother with that, who said that it's mental illness that's the cause of mass shootings. There's another person in Congress who said black people are the cause of mass shootings and gun violence. Interesting that the obvious is never being spoken of at the head of the line, which is guns. You know, guns are the main cause of mass shooting. Without a gun, what kind of mass shooting are you going to have? You know, when we were kids, we had toy guns. We had our fingers. You know, we made noises. We had our own sound effects. Somebody, you know, after being shot maybe 30, 40 times by the invisible finger gun, you know, would finally fall down in some grotesque manner, only to rise up again 10 or 15 seconds later for the next episode of, you know, our idea of fun. There was a time, I don't know if you all remember this, but there was a time when gun sales to adolescents was taboo, on the decline. Parents spoke up about the fear of children, you know, having all of these toy guns and playing with them, with each other, shooting each other. I had one that shot plastic pellets, you know. Man, it was it went real slow. And a person could see it coming to do the Jedi mind trick and just knock it out the way. But that didn't matter. It was the thrill of the projectile. And y'all might be too young to remember BB guns. Your dad, Adam, has a version of a BB gun. It's kind of a ball-bearing pellet kind of thing that he uses to shoo the squirrels away. But there was this guy, I don't know, Idaho, one of those Rust Belt, I guess is what it's called, states. One of the congresspersons there said that they need their AR-15s. It's what they use to keep the varmints away from their cattle, their chickens, their vulnerable critters, you know, running around on their farms. They need an AR-15 to shoot possums, is what he said. You know, obviously they don't know anything about my cousin Art. You know, he is very skilled at the practice of shooing away squirrels from his tomatoes or his cherry blossoms or whatever he's growing. But my man Adam could speak more to that. So, you know, the issues of mental illness as it relates to gun violence. First of all, how much do y'all know about mental illness? You know, I mean, there's this huge volume. It's called the DSM. I think now it's the DSM-5. It's the Diagnostic Statistics Manual written by psychiatrists for psychiatry. Any diagnosis that one is given from the Diagnostic Statistics Manual is recognized by the World Health Organization, meaning that if I'm diagnosed with a mental disorder and given whatever nomenclature would go with that disorder, like 303.25M or something like that, and no matter where I am, any country, anywhere in the world, if I should wind up in a hospital for any reason, the World Health Organization would be able to, in viewing my background stats, would find this diagnosis. That would be valuable information if, in fact, my diagnosis would suggest, like, let's say there's a diagnosis that would indicate I'm a alcoholic. There is none, but let's say there was. Unfortunately, alcoholism tends to fall in diagnosis under more of a subtitle from a mental disorder these days. But let's say that, you know, just for the sake of, and then I could be wrong. Maybe the DSM-5 changed all that. So before you start sending your letters or cussing me out on Facebook, I admit I'm only an expert in one area. That's my own opinion. So I'm prone to make mistakes in this way. Regardless, let's say I have this diagnosis of alcoholism and being a recovering person, and let's say I'm in some country where one of the maybe the available agents to help take the edge off my pain may be ether. Well, you know, ether is the base of alcohol. And seeing that I'm an alcoholic, they may decide, well, we may not want to give him ether to anesthetize him, you know, because he might freak out and start running down the hallways naked. Which I had been known to do. So instead, let's give, you know, cocaine. There's nothing here that says he has a problem with that. But you get my drift. The idea being that the World Health Organization would be able to recognize any diagnosis that's been assigned to me by psychiatry. Now, when I went into treatment for alcoholism, I didn't go into a medical detox. I went into a non-medical detox. And one of the requirements for being admitted to a non-medical detox is that you have to have a blood alcohol content of zero. Because if you go into any kind of delirium tremens, DTs, being a non-medical detox, they wouldn't have any way to treat it. So the advantage of going into a non-medical detox is that I was given a non-medical diagnosis. And my non-medical diagnosis was through my own proof, my own word of mouth, alcoholism. If I had gone into a medical facility, chances are I would have had a workup done. And the workup would have revealed several aspects of mood disorders related to alcoholism. So chances are I would have come out of a medical detox looking like a driver for NASCAR. I would have had all kind of labels all over my jacket saying, oh, he got this, he got that. Or he black, you know. First, that would have been at the top of the list. You know, no matter what other diagnosis we give him, the one thing that is proof of the fact that he's got a mental issue is that the brother black, you know, so he got his. Now, y'all might be, you know, hanging up right now. You might be saying, I lost my mind. But let me tell you, we'll get to it in a minute where I'm going to substantiate my argument here, but not right now. Right now, I just want to kind of go through the themes of mental illness and substance abuse. When I first got into the field of counseling back in the early 80s, 83 to be exact, there was this new kid on the block, and it was called substance abuse and mental illness, or what I referred to, it's an unofficial title, I referred to it as SAMI, S-A-M-I, substance abuse and mental illness. The idea was, before we could even begin to diagnose mental illness, we had to remove all evidence of any substances, especially where any substance, meaning chemical drug, had been abused or misused. So get all the drugs out. Alcohol's a drug and a depressant. Let's get all that out of the person. And then we can take a closer look if there's any underlying issues of mental disorders. But that changed shortly before I left the field. I retired how long ago now? 13 years ago? Wow. And right when I left, there was a new definition, and it's been redefined again, but at the time was called MISA, meaning mental illness and substance abuse. So the idea was shifted that we would diagnose the issues of possible mental illness before we would even begin to look at subsequent concerns around substance abuse. So depending on what camp you're in, the arguments, of course, didn't really get off the ground because medical directors pretty much have the final say-so in what direction a treatment program is going to go. So mental illness became the kid on the block. And, of course, once again, the problem with that, as I see it, is because substance abuse can have so many underlying characteristics that can be tied directly to mental disorders. I think, again, I'm only expert in my own opinion, there's just been a lot of misdiagnosis out here in this world. I'm not even going to begin to try and tell you how many misdiagnoses I think have happened for black people. Well, I will tell you on second thought why I believe that. I believe it because I don't know of a model in America that is solely and purposely about its own research, therefore backed up by diagnosis and treatment that has to do exclusively with information gathered through black clients. Maybe there is one out there. Now, let me be clear. I know there's people who are going to say, oh, wait a minute, there's part of my community and only black people going to. Yeah, but my point is this. More than likely, the people who are in the position to treat mental illness and substance abuse, the ones with the letters in front and at the back of their names, probably came through a traditional school of psychiatry. Traditional meaning based on the Eurocentric model. The Eurocentric male model pretty much based on the Protestant work ethic. So that theme that has a lot of foundation in the making of this country as we know it. You know, it's square peg, round hole. I'm a black man. I go into a treatment program. I got a black doctor. But a black doctor went to, let's say, Johns Hopkins. Let's say, well, let's just say that for the hell of it. Then that's the model he's going to be trained under. So everything he's learned, he's going to find a way to make what he knows fit me. I have to respond accordingly because failure to do so would suggest that I'm living in some form of a defense mechanism. So let's just figure out what defense mechanism this brother's showing that makes it impossible for him to tell us the truth about what got him here. You know, we're going to make this square peg fit this round hole. And I know, you know, most of you, some of you, maybe one or two of you don't know what I mean by defense mechanisms, where there's a lot of them. And more than likely, you know, people who specialize in any or all of them, maybe. It's kind of the nature, I think, of being black in America. You're going to develop a defense mechanism. It's a protector of the ego. It's an absolute necessity for survival in America. It's the thing that keeps us in some form of functionality, that keeps us from just losing our ever-loving minds by being treated constantly wherever we go as if we don't even exist. You know, we've learned, you know, how to, and unfortunately, we've learned so well how to deal with it that I have a feeling modern psychiatry really believes that black folks are somewhat impervious to the issues of substance abuse because we've done so well at survival. Well, of course I have a problem with that, right? I'm trying to pick my words carefully. It's a matter of survival versus success. I don't have a yardstick. I don't have a thermometer. I don't have a way of gauging or measuring what survival versus success is for black America unless I look at the model that already exists. Herein lies the rub. That's pretty much the recipe for non-white people in America, period. We don't dictate social policy. We react to it. We don't dictate political policy. We react to it. You know, we in our reactions, however our reactions are, that's the element that's used to determine and diagnose our mental state. So that theme above all this, not theme, that label, that brand, and I don't mean brand, you know, like greenhouse effect. I mean brand like a cattle brand, you know, has the big M and is called minority. You know, I live under a ceiling, and it's not glass. It's concrete. And that concrete ceiling is what keeps me in this mindset of minority status, something lesser than the greater whole. Once being labeled, once being branded minority, I don't get to be anything else. If I attempt to be something else, well, now I'm in line to receive some type of psychological workup, something that would suggest, wait a minute, you know, this is who you are. You remember when Tiger Woods came out of the woods, so to say, and declared, you know, his dual race in his mom being Asian, his dad being black. And you remember the fallout he received when he said that he really just didn't think of himself as being black, and how quickly everybody, not everybody, you know, but everybody I knew pounced on that and said, yeah, well, he may think he's something other than black, but boy, is he about to find out. Look here, in America, you're black. I don't care how many other parents, I don't care what your genealogy is. In America, you got one drop of black, you're black. You know, and therein, you know, lies that rub, that we have so conditioned ourselves that we don't accept any of the lineages that course through our bloods. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I don't know too many 100% full-blooded Mandinga warriors in America. You know, I know a lot of brothers and sisters that are darker than me. Well, the majority, probably. You know, and I know they would, you know, take umbrage at the idea of suggesting that they ain't 100% African. Well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they found out that they have a percentage of other cultures that they never would have guessed. It's just the result of having the bloodline so corrupted in the way that Africans were transformed from African to slave to Negro in America. I mean, just who the hell are we? So I have – my mother told me back in the 60s when my generation was become, we were stepping out of the shadows of being Negro. We were moving into the light of black, Afro, African American. You know, a black Afro African American. And she said, "Well, you know, black is beautiful, no doubt, but don't get so caught up in being black that you deny yourself all of the rest of your lineage." And I had no idea what she was talking about. You know, what do you mean all the rest of my lineage? Look, I have enough issues dealing with the fact of being called high yellow. Why you think I got this big 9-foot afro on the top of my head? Why you think I'm wearing dashikis and tikis around my neck and got a big pick in the back of my hair, you know, one of them afro picks, you know, and them big, you know, platform shoes and bell-bottom pants? You know, why do you think I'm doing all that, you know? Because, you know, this is the whole point of wanting to be black. So she said, yeah, but, you know, you have French, you have Indian, you have German, you have Irish, and you have Asian blood coursing through your veins. But you don't know anything about your genealogy, so there's no way you could even have any opportunity to just celebrate, you know, the mixture that you carry. And she was as right 50 years, 60 years ago as she is today. You know, America does not celebrate diversity, not when it comes wrapped in a package of skin. We're probably the most colorphobic country there is in the world. And as a result, I would venture to say, I think we're really stretching it to assume that this country has a lock on any diagnosis that would be reflective of mental disorders when it comes to people of color, black people in particular. So let me just move right quickly through these different kinds of, and I'm not going to define them. I'm just going to go through the list, and maybe in a future show we'll come back to, I was talking to my sister-in-law earlier today, and she said, if in fact we do discuss the issue of bipolar disorder, she might just put her hand up. She might just come into the conversation just to talk about what she knows through experience in dealing with those in our family who've been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. But we won't tonight, so hopefully sis won't hang up. Anxiety disorder, psychosis, schizophrenia, autism spectrum disorder. I didn't know that that would be considered a mental illness. Bipolar disorder, borderline personality disorder, major depressive disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, panic attack, Asperger's syndrome. I did not know that would be considered a mental disorder. Adjustment disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, borderline personality disorder, intellectual disability. So I am all messed up in the head. Anyway, dissociative identity disorder. Now, the dissociative identity disorder is when a patient has two or more personalities. But y'all thought that was schizophrenia, didn't you? And then one that I didn't even find listed in the two sources I used that I just looked up on its own to get its definition. Depression, and that's something. Depression is a common mental disorder affecting more than 264 million people worldwide. Now, I think that's something that should require some attention, right? It is characterized by persistent sadness and a lack of interest or pleasure in previously rewarding or enjoyable activities. The causes of depression include complex interactions between social, psychological, and biological factors, life events such as childhood adversity, loss, and unemployment contribute to and may catalyze, meaning quicken, the development of depression. Now, why would I pick on these two? Why would I highlight these two, dissociative identity disorder and depression? Well, I think that's a good place to start when one may have a reason to be concerned about the behavior of black people. 2, 3, maybe 4 years ago, the Harvard School of Mental Health did a study. And in this study, they came out with a finding that it is depressing to be black in America. A cause of depression. Do you hear me? You know, being black in America. Now, you know, again, you know, you may scoff at that. There's a myth. Black people are inherently resilient and do not need therapy. Well, while black Americans have faced much adversity historically, no question about it, right? A person cannot think their way out of depression any more than they can think their way out of heart failure or diabetes, or in my case, alcoholism. It's a reality of the time that the underdiagnosis has had an overwhelming impact on black America. Hold on just a second. I see a number out here, area code 773-387, that looks familiar to me. Caller, you are in the queue.
I was about to say, don't be
are
giving out
there?
My phone number.
What's up, Wilfredo?
What's up? Good evening.
Thank
good
you for helping me get online, man. I was tripping. I forgot all about, you know, what you do to set up the studio. Yeah, yeah. How you doing, man? How's the trip coming? How's your ma?
Good, good. We made it home.
Amen.
I would say we're safe in Chicago, but that sounds like an oxymoron kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, oxymoron. There you go.
Safe in Chicago. But no, we're home, man. We made it back.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, say hi to everybody right quick, man.
Yeah, yeah. Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. To some
Do the
of
whole thing,
what you
because they didn't get it. They didn't get it today, man. You know, I didn't know how to say what is it, introbinos or whatever it is you say. All the rest of the other hellos.
Yeah, bienvenidos, que tal, namaste, oki, and welcome, welcome, welcome.
Amen. Yeah,
so thank you, everybody.
Yeah,
for,
man,
for listening in.
And I absolutely could not figure out how to work the music, so I'm glad that I was able to get the at least I kept the tradition going, you know. So I got the Two Wolves story in, you know, but it didn't have the Will Green effect in it.
It's all good.
So how
it's
we doing
good.
Tonight
Wednesday,
so far, man? Yeah.
Wednesday we can go back to It's So Hard. Doing good,
yeah,
man. And so I was listening to something earlier, listening to you. You were talking about the January 6th. Thing. But
yeah,
you know, what are we looking for? The director's cut. I think the closest thing we're going to get to a director's cut is that little piece that everybody's sharing with Bill Barr and Ivanka
yeah
Trump. You know,
yeah,
that's probably going to be it. You know, where, you know, Barr, in case people don't know, Barr said no, there was no fraud after his investigation, and even Trump's own daughter says she believes Bill Barr. She kind of threw dude under the bus, as they say, you know, because they always thought that they're going to support each other. I don't know. You know, I think
yeah
that maybe the only thing, like for me, I would like to see, you know, I would like to prove Jackson wrong, because he said 2 years ago nothing was going to happen. So
mm-hmm
they were all going to get
yeah
away
well
with it. You know? So mm-hmm I think that most of us are probably, you know, wanting to see, you know, some repercussion to their actions.
Yeah.
And it's slowly happening, but we know that, you know, just like there's a bunch of guns in America, there's a bunch of people who get away with the crap that they do, you know.
And it's a bunch of people that support it.
And a bunch of people that support it. Who say
yeah
one thing, they do something else. You know how things are, you know. So I think that a lot of times we watch these things hoping that something would be different, right? We watch these
right
cases
right
involving cops, you know, cutting down our people, you know, and,
right
and really just with the hopes of something being different, you know, that the outcome is different, that there's actually a fair shake at the end of the day and not, you know, a part of it. You know, and then there's something else later, whatever. I don't know if that is making sense, but for me anyway,
making
that's
sense
what
to
I'm
me.
Kind of, yeah, for me that's what I just kind of, you know, what I kind of look for. But
mm-hmm
you know, like still, you know, I mean, we know who did it. We know who gassed them up, and mm-hmm there's this. You know, that I think that's what we're looking for. We still want these pieces to say, yeah, this dude, you're talking about mental illness, you know, yeah, this dude's got some serious problems, you know, and,
yeah
and he shouldn't run for president again, you know, and he shouldn't even be, shouldn't
mm-hmm
even have that opportunity to even lead or whatever. But you know, it's one thing that
yeah
history and that you talked about, you know, that we've talked about on these shows, and when we connect the dots and we connect history to the present from the past, is that America sure likes making the same mistakes over and over again, especially if it ends up benefiting, quote unquote, them. You know, you guys figure
well
out who
them
is. Well,
and I think therefore it's not a mistake. Yeah. But therefore then for them it's not a mistake. You know, they're doing the same thing over and over again because of success. You know,
yeah
we're reacting the same way over and over again.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to cut you off. Go ahead, man. I'm really enjoying this, man. I think you've talked more tonight being on the road than all the times when you've been present in the studio. Keep it going. I'm digging this.
Man, you have 40 minutes, man. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, you know me. I ain't never seen a mic I didn't like. Yeah.
Hey, we're on 2,000 tonight, ladies and gentlemen. 2,000 words tonight. So, again, thank you for
amen
all those that stuck around and listened. And you know, I know you had some tech issues earlier. So
again, just thank you, everybody.
But no, that was kind of the end of my piece as far as the January 6th thing. Gun control, you know, guns and stuff like that. Now they, yeah, Mom and I were talking about, you know, like, I think there's in Ohio, I think there's a governor that is trying to get teachers to have guns in the classroom to protect themselves. But,
well, yeah, that's,
you know,
a movement, period. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that's definitely another conversation for another show, you know, and
definitely.
As much as I
not
love,
tonight.
My, you
yeah.
know, yeah, you know, but as much as I love my teachers and the plight that they have to deal with, you know, I don't think that they are, you know, the people who should be, who that I don't think that situation should occur. But again, we can talk about
that
for another time.
Yeah, that's an ongoing debate. I mean, that's not just one thing said out of Ohio. It has its own following, and it has its own momentum. You know, that's spreading across the country. Law
mm-hmm.
enforcement is on both sides of that fence. You know, obviously teachers' union is on one side of the fence. And the poll of teachers, if that's an indicator, 87% are against it, but that means 13% are for it. You know, so you'd have
right.
to wonder, where is that 13% teaching? You know, anyway, you
right.
know, but let's explore
yeah.
that in an upcoming show. Amen, man. So I want to just go over a couple more things tonight, if you don't mind. I want to kind of move into them and try to get this done as close to 8 o'clock as possible tonight. You know,
go for
so
it.
So you all right with that?
You know, yeah. I got ears on. Then do your thing. Good show.
Okay. All righty, man. Hey, man. Love to you and Mom, man. And, of course, it was great talking to my grandson today. I'm really glad you're all back safe. Amen.
Yeah, thank you.
And everything will be back to normal Wednesday, y'all. You hear all the greetings, you hear all the explanations, and you get the appropriate times of putting the muzzle on my damn mouth. Yeah, I'm like in a free feeding frenzy right now. Yeah, all right, man. Love you, man.
All right, love you.
Yeah. Say what's up. Say holla out at Adam. You know, he's faithful man. You know, he's in the queue.
Oh, yeah, we were already talking about you earlier. We were texting each other as you were trying to find the override.
Thanks a lot. Well, I figured it out, though. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Now I know. All right. Now I know what those numbers are up there for. That's deep. Okay, man. Holla. So, shifting into the third topic, we talked about guns. We talked about, you know, the January 6th thing. This whole issue around mental illness and substance abuse obviously is going to extend itself into maybe Wednesday's show. Now, I wanted to talk about two stalwarts in the field of psychiatry, Dr. Benjamin Rush and Dr. Sigmund Freud. Although one is considered to be the father of American psychiatry, that would be Dr. Rush. Freud, Dr. Sigmund Freud, is generally acknowledged as the father of psychoanalysis. So now Rush came before Freud. Rush was born in the 1700s. Freud was born in the 1800s. It's almost a 100-year difference, 1745 to 1856. There's contrasts regardless. And, you know, you figure, you know, Benjamin Rush probably came from Europe. So his ties wouldn't be that far-fetched from the very roots that Freud extrapolated on. Now, Rush, being considered the father of American psychiatry, you know, was also a founding father. You know, they love to call these guys that, the founding father of the United States, or at least as we know it, the United States today. He also signed the Declaration of Independence. He was a civic leader, a physician, a politician, a social reformer, a humanitarian, an educator, and the founder of Dickinson College, which was considered to be the first college to be founded after the formation of the United States in September of 1783. Dr. Rush was also an abolitionist who believed black people suffered from a disorder he called negritude due to having dark skin. He described the condition as being akin to leprosy. The only cure for this condition was to become white. You know, I know. You know, what was he on? You know, when you give birth to something, you get to pretty much call it anything you want. So if he's believed to be the father of American psychiatry, you know, then who would oppose him? You know, he had an opinion of one. But let me just finish a little bit of this. Dr. Rush cited the case of Henry Moss, a slave who lost his dark skin color, probably due to, how do you pronounce it, vitigulo, V-I-T-I-G-U-L-O. You've seen it before, you know, in black folks. I think Michael Jackson, well, they say he didn't have this disorder or this skin discoloration. But when the pigments break down and you start seeing this real pinkish color come over the skin. So he used Henry Moss to support his claim of negritude being a medical condition. He believed being black was a curable skin disease. Rush wrote, white should not tyrannize over blacks, for their disease should entitle them to a double portion of humanity. However, by the same token, this is still quoting Dr. Rush, by the same token, whites should not intermarry with them, for this would tend to infect posterity, meaning future generations, with the disorder. Attempts must be made to cure the disease. Now, I don't know, other than this pigmentation breakdown, what his idea of curing the disease was. But he wasn't speaking metaphorically. He wasn't saying change the mind. He was saying change the skin. I could have dug it if he was saying by becoming white, meaning, you know, like Clarence Thomas. No, I shouldn't pick on the brother. But, you know, changing your behavior. No, it's a skin disease akin to leprosy. So this is the father of American psychiatry. Now, 100 or so years later, Freud trots into the scene. Now, considered to be the father of psychoanalysis for, like I said, Freud was born in, why am I having so much trouble reading? He was born in 1856 and died in 1939. He visited the United States once in the early 1900s, but there's no record of him ever treating, diagnosing, or otherwise interacting with black folks. Psychoanalytic therapy emphasizes the unconscious. That's the mental, emotional processes that occur undetected by the conscious mind. Now, I'm not going to time keep me because it's 8 already, so I don't want to go too far into overtime. So time will keep me from going too much deeper into Freud other than to just say this. Freud felt that society's influence in establishing the standards of appropriate behavior can block the development of a healthy personality. Let me read that one more time. Hope you got your pen and paper and envelopes and napkins handy. Freud felt that society's influence in establishing the standards of appropriate behavior can block the development of a healthy personality. Are you hearing me? You know, he felt that society's influence in establishing the standards of appropriate behavior. So you have to define for yourself what you think appropriate behavior means for black folks in America. So let's look at this again. Freud felt that society's influence in establishing the standards of appropriate behavior in black people can block the development of a healthy personality. Man, fixation. Fixation is a defense mechanism easier defined as halted psychological development. And keeping in mind, once again, fixation, halted psychological development, and a host of defense mechanisms like displacement, interjection, ritual and undoing, sublimation, and so forth, would have to be employed to help one caught in a no-exit existence contend with life's challenges. And I'm just going to go through this one more time and we're out of here. Freud felt that society's influence in establishing the standards of appropriate behavior, and then I'm putting in parentheses, in black people, blocked the development of healthy personality. So now since slavery, we've had no manual on freedom, you know, since the Emancipation Proclamation, rather. We've had no manual, you know, we meaning American society has no, you know, I know we got the Civil Rights Act and the Civil Rights, you know, movement and voters' rights and all that. But like I said, we have no manual. You know, the Emancipation didn't do it, that says what it means for people who were previously locked in a life of servitude, then thrust into American society free of any debilitating restrictions that slavery imposed upon them, now set free. No manual tells them what free means. Every attempt black folks have made to be free in the overall idea of freedom has been met with vehement violence, incredible violence, overwhelming violence, you know, which only has had one intention, to destroy us. That has not been a tactic, you know, limited to black people. It was used with those native to this country. It was imposed on the Asian populations that were pretty much the backbone of building the railroad system, you know, and it's not lost its flavor in this 21st century when, you know, America has its own idea of exposing its self-righteous attitude on the idea of how it defines democracy in this society. So fixation, which has halted psychological development and a host of defense mechanisms, meaning now I'm being blocked from developing a healthy personality. So a halted psychological development has to take place, fixation. I get locked into a shallow minority consciousness, further emphasized by a host and a variation of defense mechanisms. And you'd have to look these up, displacement, interjection, ritual and undoing, sublimation, and so forth. There's I think, 12, I think, altogether defined in humanistic psychology as defense mechanisms. But they would have to be employed to help one caught in a no-exit existence contend with life challenges. You know, and if you continue to read more about who this father of psychoanalysis is and his ideas, then you would read about his stages of psychosexual development. Very important to understand, black folks live in a society that doesn't use its own rules to help them understand how they deal with people of color, you know, or non-white people, and really non-white men. You know, there's a conditioning that that the founding fathers established right from the start, the 6% theory, that they run it and they dictate to the rest of this developing country, which they have, what the norms are. And it has its own scapegoats built in. The Electoral College would be one example. We've talked in several shows about the way white supremacy has revealed itself in the ongoing development of American society. I'm sure there'll be times when we will be reviewing all those. But just for the state of the record, because this all goes into our archive, I just wanted to put Dr. Rush and Dr. Freud on the block. You know, I just wanted to, you know, put them into the consideration of when we start discussing and debating the issues of mental health as it's related to mass shootings. We need to understand that we don't know a damn thing about mental health. And anybody who's a lawmaker who steps out there and starts espousing their own ignorance are revealing that very fact. You know, America as a society will accept anything that explains its own denial away from itself. You know, and let me say this one last thing, and I'm speaking to this country as a whole. If we don't know who we are, anybody can call us whatever they want. And that's what America has been reduced to, you know, where the rest of the world is starting to identify us as a country in any way they want. So that about wraps it up. Will, I'm thankful that you called in, man, and I'm thankful that you dropped some pearls of knowledge onto us. Glad you and your mom made it safely back. I didn't miss anybody in the studio because no hands went up. I hope this has been evocative enough for those who have stuck true to the cause and have stuck around to the end of the show to consider, you know, where your stance is regarding mental illness and substance abuse, the January 6th hearings, and gun violence in America. And hopefully, you know, in the process of giving it some consideration and some thought, you know, it'll be grounds for a future show and an eventual call in. So thank you all for dialing in. Thank you for sticking around.
Happy birthday, Jackson.
Happy birthday to Jackson. Turn this down a little bit. Yeah, right on, Will. Thank you, man. Happy birthday, Jackson. My man, 16. And happy birthday to my friend Ariel. Birthday last week to cousin Jeff. Birthday coming up to nephew Ray. And all the rest of you crazy Gemini. Brother Jeff back yesterday. Okay, everybody. Good night. Love you all. Amen. Amen, everybody. Good night.